tonight we have with us Mr. Peter Thornycroft, the British Minister of Defense, who's been in the Bahamas having discussions, particularly, of course, with Mr. Robert S. McNamara, his opposite number in the United States. Mr. Thornycroft, these were important discussions, were they not? The discussions you had
very important.
In telling as they did, they were the first time that the two governments have met since the Cuban crisis.
Well, yes, of course, it must be remembered that we, having as we do a special relationship with the United States, we and the British government were in the fortunate position of being informed in advance of the Cuban maneuvers. About 3.5 minutes in advance. But we were informed in advance through the good offices of the CIA. Cuban invasion agency. It was really more on defense that Mr. McNamara and I had our prolonged argument. There's no use considering the fact that there were enormous differences of opinion on defense between the British and American government.
Yes.
Differences of opinion of a kind which must inevitably exist from time to time between two equal partners in the great military alliance. But eventually we reached the only form of agreement which I think it was possible to make under those circumstances, whereby Mr. McNamara put forward his government's point of view as forcefully and clearly as he could, and I agreed with it.
Now, sir, I believe that the Skyboat missile was a bone of contention between the two governments.
Well, yes, of course. The Skyboat missile was Britain's only real guarantee of independence as a major nuclear and military power. It was, of course, an American missile paid for by American money, but it did seem to be our only guarantee of independence as a nuclear power. And the Americans decided to scrap it.
Did they?
Completely, yes, because it was frightfully expensive for them, and they couldn't make it.
Quite
another this came as an enormous blow to the Royal Air Force, as you can imagine, because we've been rather depending on having it, you see, for the Royal Air Force, and for that purpose, we specifically developed our fleet of Volta-winged V-bombers.
Oh, I know, those peculiar triangle-shaped things.
The Vulcan II, yes, and, now, since we haven't got the Skyboat, we've got nothing left to do with our Volta-winged V-bombers. He can possibly stick them upright in the ground and use them as road signs.
That's right. Yes, exactly. How do things stand at the moment, then, sir?
Well, of course, the Americans said that they would continue developing the Skyboat if we paid for it.
Yes, but
a matter of $2.5 or $3 billion.
That's a lot of money, sir.
It's only reasonable, I suppose. After all, if we are going to America's first line of defense, it's only fair we should pay for it. And it must be admitted, the Americans have paid for the whole of the development cost of the Skyboat up to the present time. The whole thing has been borne by America. The RAF, who are going to be benefited by it, haven't paid a single penny.
Yes.
They said they might.
Yes.
Later on.
Right.
But they're extremely doubtful.
Yes.
Extremely doubtful. They haven't got any money. I mean, what Sir Winston Churchill said about the Royal Air Force during the Battle of Britain still holds true today, I think. Never was so much owed.
So, what's going to happen now, sir? What exactly is it?
We're not being left stripped absolutely naked. We are going to get the Polaris. Later on.
When?
In the early 1970s.
Yes. Quite a gap, of course.
Well, yes, I suppose so, yes. We could have it now, of course. Yeah. Polaris. Oh, we could have it straight away. The Americans are going to be... We won't take it. We've got nothing to put it in.
No.
So we're thinking of developing our own thing to stand, to cover the gap.
Yes, what is that?
So-called blue steel.
Oh, yes, I've got it.
Blue steel, which is a very good missile of our own. It has a range of 150 miles.
Yeah.
Very useful weapon. So if there's any trouble in Scotland, by the way.
Where things are at the moment. What are the Americans
using
at the moment?
The Americans have got their own thing, of course, now. The Minuteman, which they're producing in large quantities. The Minuteman,
yes.
Very good thing.
Yes.
As you know, only a matter of weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, perhaps it was for a month, so we were put on full operational status with the United States Army for the first time. It was a big ceremony which was held underground somewhere, where they packed bottles of champagne over it. It went off, as a matter of fact. They were awfully pleased by that. It was the first successful test firing they had in 2 years. That's where they're going to have the Minutemen ground to sea guided missile, as they call it. Yeah. So called because they fire it from the ground and a minute later it plunges into the sea. Yeah.
So discussions are still going on in a technical nature. Now, I presume Europe must have cropped up from time to time anyway.
Yeah, well, they're very fond of Europe, isn't it? Yeah. It's all part of a rather larger global design. I mean, it's basically, if you want to put it in perspective,
then fine, sir.
Well, it is the job of a British Minister of Defence, such as myself, to hear about him from time to time and see where all the trouble lies in the world. Mm-hmm. And one night, I remember very vividly, I was sitting in the House of Commons listening to the Prime Minister making one of his speeches, and it came to me in a dream quite the greatest problem in the world. Well, of course, Germany. And in Germany, Berlin itself.
Berlin.
Now, in the summer of 1961, as you probably read in the newspapers, the East Germans, cunning devils as they are, rather still a tactical march upon us by building across the middle of Berlin a wall, which is in some places 8 or 10 feet high.
As high as that, is it? Now, that's fiendishly clever on them, is it not?
And this, of course, completely knocks out our missiles.
Oh, of course it does.
They simply haven't got the height, you see.
What are you doing about this, sir?
Well, we're having to rethink completely.
And
we are developing a number of new techniques to combat this issue. For example, the so-called ladder technique.
Well, what is that?
Which involves placing the ladders against the wall and carrying the missiles up and throwing them over.
How's this coming along?
Well, this is only in the drawing board still. And so we have a lot of men standing on drawing boards and throwing them.
Rather stand like that. Same principle. Exactly. Now, sir, what would you say has been the main British contribution to the Berlin situation?
Well, faced with the menace of the wall, the British, with our characteristic genius for simplicity, are concentrating our attentions on the gates. Piling the skeleton things and things of that kind. Now, of course, there are only a few of these left along the length of the wall where access between one sector and another is possible.
Right.
And the most important of these gates is at a place called Friedrichstrasse.
Friedrichstrasse, I've heard of that.
So called Checkpoint Charlie.
Charlie means a bit.
Oh, yeah, that's where they're concentrating our attention. A lot of very nasty incidents have been occurring there recently.
Yes, sir.
Now, it would be enormous help to me if I had a map of this area which I could look at.
You'd like a map of the area, sir.
Yes.
I have one of my own. I'd like one to show
you.
Stupid on me. I misunderstood you, sir. No, entirely.
I think we've got a map, yes, sir.
I'd like to explain the tactical situation around Friedrichstrasse. The reason I need this map, which I've been doing.
Just 1 second. I'll stand up here, sir. Then I think you'd better see better now.
This is on a rather small scale, isn't it? This particular map of Friedrichstrasse.
Yes.
This is the world I'm looking at, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's the world. Sir. Yes, it is. I see the equator going right the way through there. Yes, that must be the world.
Well, thank you. Now, Friedrichstrasse is...
That's us, the small one. They're the big one. And with China on the other end, it makes an enormous land mass, all full of chaps. Nice to have again, sir.
I never want to see that again. It's all right here.
Where were we?
Exactly right. Now, as you can all see from the map, Friedrichstrasse does present to us the most enormously difficult tactical problem.
Yeah.
Well, what we in the British government have decided to do is to follow the example of President Kennedy and throw up.
Huh?
What?
And what?
Throw up a blockade.
A series of
roadblocks, you see, around this area, forming a kind of quarantine, very similar to his very successful quarantine. And what we hope to do, you see, by the use of this quarantine around the Friedrichstrasse area, is to prevent the devilish Russians carrying into eastern Berlin supplies of offensive bullets.
Offensive bullets.
Now, of course, defensive bullets, anybody is entitled to, even the East Germans. But we do take the greatest possible attention to offensive bullets, and we are going to weed them out.
I'm sorry.
Weed, weed, weed.
Yes,
I'm
sorry. I said, how do you tell the difference between these offensive and defensive bullets?
Well, that's going to be our big problem. I believe that the offensive bullets have O mark on them, and the defensive bullets have D. And the most offensive bullets of all have, this is for you, Jack. The clearly visible through the identifying reconnaissance.
Exactly. Now, sir, just to return to the Cuban situation for 1 second, if you can, please. Why do you think that Mr. Khrushchev capitulated quite so quickly when the president asked him to take his bombers off the island?
Well, I mean, it's a turning point in history. I think because he'd been killed, you see, through private diplomatic channels, that if he hadn't have done so, Mr. Kennedy really was prepared to unleash the ultimate deterrent.
Really?
That is to say, he was prepared to release Major General Walker from hospital in Kennedy.
Indeed, it would have been, sir. Just one last question, Mr. Thornycroft, if you can, sir. What do you think the president's next move will be over Cuba?
I'm not afraid he will be over Cuba, but I don't know. He's actually said his main policy is still to consider ways of heaping even more degradation and humiliation upon the head of the mighty dictator Castro.
Well, now, how would he do this? It's difficult, is it not?
Well, certainly it would be much simpler if Dr. Castro were a Negro. They could just persuade him to enroll for a university here and have
a good time. Thank you very much, Dr. Castro.